Dan Glickman was a Jewish kid from Kansas, son of self-made entrepreneurial parents and a grandson of Russian and Eastern European immigrants. He ended up as a congressman, secretary of agriculture, and chief lobbyist for Hollywood. The big question is, well, how did that happen? Glickman joins us this morning to discuss his new book, Laughing at Myself, My Education in Congress, on the Farm, and at the Movies. Dan Glickman is a senior fellow at the Bipartisan Policy Center and an adjunct professor of agriculture and nutrition at Tufts University. He served for 18 years in the U.S. House of Representatives, representing the 4th Congressional District of Kansas. He also served as the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture from 1995 to 2001 and as chairman of the Motion Picture Association of America from 2004 to 2010. Again, the name of the book, Laughing at Myself. It's a great pleasure to welcome Dan Glickman to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, great pleasure to have you on the program. So after all you have achieved, what brought you to pen to paper and say, I want to tell this story?
Well, after listening to your introduction, it's pretty clear I can't hold a job very long. So I decided I would write my memoir. But I'm a lucky guy, but I was lucky to have the parents and grandparents I did, and lucky that the country allowed them in, 100 years ago or so. And basically learned from them that humor, especially self-deprecating humor and treating people well, was a formula for success in business and in politics. And we kind of have a humorless society now. And so I wrote this book to try to talk about how I used humor as a way to remove the toxicity from politics during the time that I served.
But the toxicity is different, isn't it? I mean, is it just us with sort of nostalgia that says, oh, maybe those days were easier? Or was it just as bad then as it is now?
I think it's worse now, but it wasn't perfect back then either, and I think your point about nostalgia is good. We look back and we think, oh, the good old days. And then back then we thought about the good old days. And so we're going back in time a long time to really find the good old days. But I do think that times are different now. Politics is tougher. The money in politics is just overwhelming the system. The nature of our media is so much different, and the tribalism between parties is such that, you can't be a moderate very much anymore. And that's the key to getting things done, is to be in the center. And the center is, these days, is a really bad political place to be.
Can that change?
I hope so. I mean, I think most Americans are in the center. To use a football analogy, most Americans are between the 40-yard line and the 40-yard line. The problem is it's the people between the end zone and the 20-yard line on both ends of the football field are kind of running the show. And I think good leadership can make a difference. Leadership not only at the federal level, but at the state and local level and business and in the private sector. And rewarding bad behavior is something we should not do. And, when you look back the last few months with this Capitol Hill insurrection and the way people have said that the election wasn't on the level, those are things that really hurt our country because they're not true and they're very harmful.
So let's talk about your story, as the book does, which I just find fascinating. What brought you to want to serve your state of Kansas in the first place, to be a representative and ultimately one who was there for a fairly long time?
I can't point to a specific date, but I was president of the 6th grade at Fabrique Elementary School in Wichita. So I suppose it was probably always in my blood. And I was a middle child, and we sometimes had contentious times in our family. And so I was kind of what I'd call the great conciliator of the Glickman family. And that probably led me into wanting to be a politician. But I was never terribly ideological. I'm a Democrat and proud of it, but I have lots of Republican friends and worked across the aisle all the time. And in Kansas, you had to, because there were very few Democrats in the state of Kansas. So I just think it was part of my natural ability to kind of want to be in the thicket of things and wanting to solve problems.
So once you go and you're there on the ground and you're serving in the legislature, do you feel that you do that? Do you feel that you are indeed, for 18 years, that you're solving those problems?
Well, I certainly was able to try to solve problems within the ambit of my expertise. So agriculture was big in Kansas. Aviation, my home of Wichita, produced at that time about half the airplanes in the world were made in my hometown because it was the home of general aviation. And you solve problems for your constituents. One of the big changes between then and now, I'll be honest with you, is I had a lot of fun being in Congress. I even had a lot of fun being in the cabinet. I mean, it was like, it was fun. It was enjoyable. And I'm not sure the people who are in the jobs now have much fun with it. And that's a tragedy.
Yeah, they don't look like they're having fun. I mean, I don't know whether they are or not, but it doesn't look like a lot of fun. And
well, you know, everything's contentious. And,
yeah.
And it seems like nothing gets done. Now, that's not entirely true. There are things that do get done. But, you know, the last 4 years were really tough on America, in my judgment. But, you know, I blame Trump for a lot of it. But there were some pre-existing conditions where people lost their faith and trust in government a long time ago as well. And the big thing we have to do is restore that trust. And ironically, I just saw a poll which indicated for the first time in a long time, public support and trust in Congress has actually gone up materially in the last year, which is a good sign. Hopefully it's true.
When you serve, you served in the administration. You served, as I mentioned, Secretary of Agriculture in the Clinton administration from 95 to 2001. Then a short time later, you become chairman of the Motion Picture Association of America. Now, on paper, that seems to be just a huge seismic change in your life. For you, did it seem that way at the time?
Well, you know, I would say that it's a big jump, although I would joke. I said when I was in ag, I used to grow popcorn, and then I went to the movies, I would sell popcorn. So maybe it wasn't such a gigantic. See, you got a chuckle, which is good.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is that there's a lot in common. Our two big export items in America are agriculture and food items and entertainment, television, music, and movies. So I had to deal with a lot of the same issues. But it was quite a jump. When I got into this Motion Picture Association, there were a few people who asked, what the heck does he know about entertainment industry?
Well, I was wondering if is the entertainment industry as a whole says to itself, oh, we need someone to oversee. We need a chairman. Quick, get us the ag secretary. You know, I don't
think that actually happened like that. Let me put it to you. I had friends in high places.
Okay.
So
yep.
One of them was Jack Valenti. You may remember
oh,
him.
Oh, Jack Valenti, yes.
Yeah, he was head of the Motion Picture Association for well over 30 years.
Long time.
So he liked me, and I had worked on the Judiciary Committee, and when he decided to leave, he wanted somebody who had stature, and I think he felt like having a cabinet secretary was a good thing. And I had support from you know, from a lot of people, from Bill Clinton to Bob Dole to a lot of folks that I had worked with in Congress on both sides of the aisle. That's one of my themes in my book. You don't burn bridges. You never know what opportunities are going to lie before you. And if you burn the bridge, you might not get the job.
In that idea of not burning bridges, I mean, you think of Washington as a ruthless place. Hollywood doesn't have a much better reputation. So there are similarities there as well, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, listen, Hollywood's tough. The movie industry is precarious. And, of course, we've seen what's happened to it in the last year with COVID, with theaters shutting down for a while. And although we've seen a lot of good content on television, a lot of streaming content has been really, really terrific. But they're tough characters in both. The difference is that in politics, you can't make permanent enemies. If you do, you're absolutely of no value to your constituents. So in the movie industry, it's a lot more dog-eat-dog, a lot more competitive.
What do you feel you accomplished while at the Motion Picture Association of America?
Well, you know, I helped on issues like taxes and trade and intellectual property. And then, of course, the thing that really got me most interested is the rating system that Jack Valenti had set up, you know, PG, PG-13, R. And I was responsible for modernizing the rating system and making it more transparent for parents. So that was a big achievement.
When you look at your life and this route, how do you, and in writing this book, I think inevitably you have to look back and sort of take stock, and you have to be proud of what you accomplished.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, I remember once I was walking the red carpet with my wife, and I looked at her and I said, you know, my grandfather escaped from Belarus around 1905, and look where I am right now. You know, it's basically a story about how, you know, how this country benefited from immigration just dramatically. I'm a perfect example of it. So are most Americans who came to this country. They weren't indigenous. Only very few people were indigenous to this country. So it's a nice success story. And I've got a lot of funny anecdotes. My parents were both some of the funniest people you've ever met. My dad would have been a successful comedian had it not been for the Depression, and he had to go to work for his dad. And my mother had this inherent, natural, authentic humorous quality, and I found those attributes to be really important in my life because I had my ups and downs in all the jobs that you mentioned, and I've made it through because of that humor gene.
When you read the book and you look at the title of it, of Laughing at Myself, that seems to be a mantra for you.
Well, I think the key is the title, Laugh at Yourself. Not at other people. Don't make fun of other people's weaknesses. We had a president who did that recently, and it was really disturbing to see. And I think that if you can laugh at yourself, you open yourself up to being more open and willing to talk to people. You know, we have two ears and one mouth for a simple reason. We're supposed to listen twice as much as we talk, and we don't do enough of that.
Well, the book is just fascinating, and it is really something. Was it at all difficult? Did you ever find, was there a challenge in writing it?
Yeah, very difficult. I'm not a natural writer. It took me many years, and of course, I had a lot of stuff to look through, and I had a lot of people helping me. I envy people who can write books like James Patterson and others, just one after the other, or Walter Isaacson, who I worked with and for at the Aspen Institute, has written all these books about famous people.
Right.
I'm not that way. But I did the best I could, and it's not bad, I'd have to tell you that.
Not bad at all. Dan Glickman's new book is Laughing at Myself, My Education in Congress, on the Farm, and at the Movies. Dan, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much. I wish you all the luck in the world with the book in the future.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Be well. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.